Blog Talk Radio.
And we are live with End Zone and Falcon Zone soon to follow at 30 after the hour. Hi, and welcome. We are very, very glad you are with us. It is me and the coach, Mr. Haywood Hill, this week for End Zone and Falcon Zone. How you doing this week, Mr. Hill?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. How about yourself?
Doing just good. Reggie has the week off. We'll see him again next week. But, you know, just out of the opening gate, I guess we can start with the update of what we talked about last week with Jim Irsay, where a lot of people didn't know if Roger Goodell was ever going to punish him. And what I'm hearing is it could be a 6-to-8-game suspension or even a possible fine on top of that. I mean, is this kind of a just punishment for what Mr. Irsay did?
Well, I think the commissioner has to most definitely make some examples at the top end as well. I mean, in all due fairness, he has to also take in consideration that not only do the players have to go by the code of conduct of the league, but also the owners, that they are not exempt from that. So, again, you know, under his era, we've seen, you know, some stiff punishments come down to prove his point, and I think that he has to also make that example at the top. So I think it'll be justified if he decides to go that way.
Yeah, definitely. I think he does have to make that example. And, you know, based off the kind of charge that it was, the DUI that was prescription medication related, yeah, he's got to set the precedent here, even though a lot of people try to say that maybe Irsay is the Sterling of the league, but I think what Sterling did in the NBA is completely different from this.
I agree with you. I don't think that these two things are related, other than the fact that they both are owners. But again, when we're talking about billion-dollar brands, multi-billion-dollar brands in the NFL as well as the NBA, most definitely those individuals who are privy to be part of ownership groups most definitely have to live and care of themselves at a high standard.
Yeah, absolutely. But on to a little bit brighter things. It's been brought up in the last couple weeks, and there was actually an update to this story as well that I'll share in a minute. But we teased from last week that we were going to talk about the HBO show Hard Knocks. And the big question it always brings up, is it a great inside look at the team or organization, or is it a big distraction? Now, I know they had kind of narrowed it down this year to a handful of teams, and you know, we had discussed, and here in a minute we'll tell everybody who we think they should actually target with this, but the Cleveland Browns have officially dropped their name out of the hat and declined being on this show.
I think that's a good move by Cleveland. I think with what they have and Mr. Manziel and all that he brings to the table right now with media, there's going to be more than enough for them to handle. And I'm sure that their director of media has looked at this to see if this was something that was going to be durable with all that they have in front of them right now.
Yeah, I believe so. And for those that are not familiar with the HBO Hard Knocks series, I think you know a little bit more about it than I do. But basically, they follow around a team up until the start of the season, I believe, and kind of give you more of a profile of the behind-closed-doors things that we don't get to hear about.
And that's correct. Well, basically, you know, the show started out in 2001 with the Baltimore Ravens, and it's had great success since then. I think it's in its 8th season right now. One of the things about the show that really focuses on trying to basically look at rookie players, their transition out of college into now professional sports. And I think that's one of the biggest things that it actually brings to the table, that it basically – and it, from time to time, it also will focus and choose an undrafted or journeyman to follow. As they try to make a team. And so I think it just brings a level of being more personable to players in the NFL that are not always accessible.
Right. And You know, we had went through a list last week. We had debated a lot of teams because, you know, we knew talking about this, a lot of people are like, well, if you say no to this team or this team says no, you know, then who's supposed to take it? And as we kind of profiled practically every team in the league, we come up with one true cut winner.
Right, we did. And if you would do the honors of announcing that team that we're thinking is going to be in the forefront.
Right, and you know, if it was up to us, if I was HBO, I do believe I would be calling out to University of Phoenix Stadium and seeing if the Arizona Cardinals would be interested in doing this show. They're kind of set up to be able to handle it, and it would actually showcase that great young talented defense they have out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that they have enough personalities on the team. They have enough veterans. They have perfect balance on the team right now that can handle all of the day-to-day that it takes with the film crew and watching players, along with the veterans who probably were on other teams that might have been a part of the show previously. So I think they are the team, in my opinion, that offers the most at the time for the slot.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, even their starting quarterback, because that's usually an easy target for a lot of these shows that profile the teams. Carson Palmer out there, to me, he's like a Phillip Rivers almost. It's like he's got his quietness, and then he's got his, like, I guess his shining abilities and whatever. He can kind of be both and at the same time. So, you know, having somebody like that or having John Abraham on your defense allows you to profile players without feeling like you're trying to get them in trouble.
Right, exactly. So I'm excited to see what HBO does with it this year and what team actually gets selected.
Yeah, because a lot of people have said that now that Cleveland is off the board, that everybody's default answer lately has been Jaguars, to which I'm not sure if Jaguars are ready for something like that, but at the same time, you know, they got a lot of young people they could really profile there, and Jacksonville's a pretty good place to kind of hang out and check everybody's, I guess, off-the-field movements.
It's a small city, one of the smallest ones in the National Football League. It could bring a lot of visibility to Jacksonville, which, as you know, with them being in a small market, they don't get a lot of. So, you know, they can also be one of those targeted teams. And it'd just be interesting to see how did HBO come up with the formula of choosing that particular team for this year to participate in the show.
Yeah, exactly. Because I know that some of the things they had said was they picked teams based off of you can't have one with a rookie head coach. There were exceptions that could be made, but if you had a rookie head coach or you had been on before, so, you know, the Jets, the Dolphins, the Ravens, and a handful of other teams were kind of already exempt. But there was a lot of qualifications that you had to meet. And it really narrows it down to where I guess it's pretty much Jacksonville or Arizona here.
Yeah, and like I said, again, it's going to be interesting to see how they decided if those are the two teams that are now the finalists for the show, how they finally determined which team they thought would be the better fit.
Right. And as we kind of transition into another interesting media-related tidbit, there was a study that suggested that crime rates actually dropped when the Chicago Bears played. Now, we had kind of teased this last week, and no, we didn't make this up. There's actually a handful of articles about such a thing, but you brought up how this all kind of started.
I'm sorry about that, Jeremy. Yes, I did. As a matter of fact, the history behind this started with a challenge from Ray Lewis back in 2011. Basically, what the study showed, the study was done by the University of California, Berkeley, and the researchers there found that the crime rate, including violent crime, drug arrest, and property crime, saw a consistent drop during the televised sports games. I think it was more particularly centered around Monday night game when Chicago played. But one of the things that he did, he issued a challenge during the NFL lockout to do this research. And he basically stated, and I quote, if we don't have a season, watch how much evil, which we call crime, watch how much crime picks up if you take away our game, people have nothing else to do. And that was a quote by Mr. Lewis himself. So with that being said, he issues the challenge. They then have the hard evidence in such a, you know, crime-riddled city like Chicago, and that's no pun to any of our Chicago listeners, but, you know, statistically it has been showing, you know, year after year where the crime rate has been really high in this particular major city. And to find that, you know, that type of significant drop, I think it was 15%, spoke volumes as to what sports does to a society, and more especially a community and a city like Chicago.
Yeah, and I mean, I applaud Mr. Lewis for even suggesting this, because he has kind of pushed the front office, the NFL, to do a lot of things that I felt were very necessary. And I mean, it's pretty much true. It's kind of a lot of mantra that people live by, and that, you know, some people even teach their kids. Sometimes if you keep yourself busy, you're less likely to make bad choices or to end up in trouble.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the old cliche goes that, you know, an idle mind is the devil's workshop. So now that you have, you know, football playing in a, you know, in a wonderful city like Chicago, a very vibrant city like Chicago, and for it to be able to attest to what the Bears mean and that sport means in that city says a lot.
Yeah, it definitely does. And to kind of transition from one positive to another, because that, to me, that is a positive, that we can show that sports in general can be a distraction from your regular life. You know, the same way after a big tragedy, the first thing that's really started back up are usually sports contests of some kind, whether it be pro wrestling or the NFL or even a lacrosse game sometimes can give you that distraction to make you kind of take your mind off of maybe the grief you've had recently.
Yeah, I agree. I think that has been proven time and time again. When you have lockouts in sports, then not only does the revenue drop, but you see a spike somewhere else.
Yeah, definitely. And another thing I'd kind of read this week, and we were talking about it before the show, is that there was a few media members or media outlets that have informed Tom Brady. Maybe some of you guys have heard of him. I think he plays up in New England. He was told that he may not be a top quarterback anymore. I guess it depends on the criteria they're using there, but the way he responded to me kind of brings up the point I would agree with, and that's, to him, it's about wins. It's not about stats.
Well, I agree. If you look at Brady and company and the organization he's with, the Patriots, and their system, and we've talked about this on segments of the show previously, I mean, it speaks volumes to what he's already done. If you just look at the season last year and all the different players he played with, I mean, I have to tip my hat to him. He almost ended up in the Super Bowl with guys he didn't even know. You know, he only had 2 or 3 weeks with, or 3 or 4 weeks at best, you know, and playing at such a high level. So at the end of the day, whatever the criteria that they use to determine whether or not he would be a top 5 quarterback or a top 10 quarterback, I would place the challenge to whomever that group or individuals that put that particular criteria together for that. I would challenge them to see those quarterbacks step into that same situation that Mr. Brady did last year and see if they would be able to produce getting to the conference championship game and almost to the Super Bowl.
Oh, absolutely. And that was kind of the running joke, is that he didn't know who he was throwing to, but they were catching it.
Exactly. And that shows that he has great leadership, great poise. He is worth every dollar that he's being paid in New England, in my opinion, as a coach. And it's not just always about stats. I mean, if you're just getting stats but you're not winning games, then where's the justification in the big salary at that point, especially at that particular position in the NFL?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I brought up, because of this, how many teams that if I told you you're, you know, at the cost of losing your stud quarterback or maybe your defensive end with 15 sacks, whoever your star player is, if I told you, you know, that you would have to get rid of them and add a player that's good, not necessarily as great as they are, but it would get you to a Super Bowl, how many of these teams would easily trade that? You know, like would the Green Bay Packer fans, and as strong as they are and as passionate as they are, if I said, you know, you had to give up Aaron Rodgers, but I'll give you, let's go Michael Vick even, but you'll be in the Super Bowl this year. I mean, how many of those would easily go, you know what, I like Rodgers, but if it gets me to a Super Bowl, that's what counts?
Well, as we all know, that fans are very passionate about their teams. And with that being said, whatever it takes to be at the end of the year in this particular sport, which is the Lombardi Trophy, to hoist it in the air and say that we were the best, and you always believed in that team and what they were able to do as a particular, as a fan of that particular team, yeah, of course, they would most definitely say, okay, we love, but we don't love that much. We'll get over it.
Well, but, you know, especially with your extensive background, let me pose it to you this way. Let's say you're the head coach of a team, and I tell you that if you're willing to sacrifice or to bench or for whatever reason your star player or your star two players had to sit down, but you would be getting, you know, but you get a deep run in the playoffs. I mean, is that something that you would consider?
Well, I wish it was that simple. You know, as coaches, we don't have a magic ball that we look into that can determine our futures. We most definitely day in and day out are trying to figure out what is the best formula on the field, or how much flexibility a coach has with inside the organization to make those type of decisions. And so we also and be prepared every week. We always have to prepare. I don't personally like to say that I have starters. I personally like to say I have finishers. So, you know, when we're going at the end of the week or midweek and starting to determine who's going to play and how much time they're going to see, we're also in that same breath looking at the bullet saying, is that backup strong enough to finish the game if necessary? So, you know, benching what would be considered by two consistent guys for a playoff run, I don't know if I would do that. I don't know. You know, I think, you know, fans see it a little differently than I do from the profession. But one thing is for certain is that when you walk out as a head coach and you're going into battle for that week to win because it is a performance-based business, you most definitely want to feel comfortable that you had, you know, the personnel on the field and you had the backup personnel if necessary to continue to compete and try to win the football game.
Right. And as kind of we're in the last handful of minutes here, we like to go over some of the quick news and notes across the league and various smaller things going on. I do want to start with, because I've always considered it a pretty good accomplishment, and a lot of people do as well. Rich Sherman won the Madden cover for this year. And as good as an accomplishment as that is, he did something that not a lot of people typically do when they win that. He suggested that the rest of the Legion of Boom, which are the rest of the defensive backs and safeties up in Seattle, be on the cover with him.
Well, that just speaks high volumes to his character. That was kind of questioned at one point in time. It also speaks to the true essence of team. I mean, if you take that in consideration, he didn't. There's no I in team, and he just proved it. He just proved it by asking his colleagues to join him on the Covenant cover of Madden. So that says a lot about who he is. It says a lot about how he feels about his teammates, and more importantly, it shows and displays what it means to be part of a team.
Exactly, and just. This guy just continues to just grow on me and grow on me as far as, I mean, I thought he was a pretty good player, and then I got to see a lot of his games last year, and he just, you can just see the evolution. And even, I you know, as I've said before, I guess it's the pro wrestling fan in me. His kind of motivated speech at the end of the Super Bowl, I kind of looked at it as appropriate at the time that, you know, maybe he was a little more animated than he should have been, but he was coming off the passion of the game, one of the biggest games of his career to that point, and he has got to be one of the most passionate football players in the league right now.
I agree, and I think that he just proved that if you just continue to work hard and you really embrace the concept of team. I've always said this before, and, you know, being on a championship team myself, it is very hard to beat a football team. Individuals you can game plan for, a couple of individuals you can game plan for, but a team that you just cannot beat. You just cannot beat a team that doesn't care how they win as long as they win within the parameters and the concept of good team sportsmanship. It's just that's and again that's why I lean back toward the Patriots and looking at their run at a lot of Super Bowls. I look at the Baltimore Ravens and what they were able to do. And if you go and you find you look for what that common denominator is in those teams that had multiple Super Bowls, even the Dallas Cowboys. Again, I didn't want to forget them as well. You will find that they had a football team. Now everybody has a team, but the difference in being on a team and being part of a team is where the difference lies.
Right. And, you know, we wish the best for all the teams, but especially Richard Sherman on his the rest of his career, but especially this year because of the Madden curse that typically once you're on the cover, the next year you typically get hurt. So I hope he's able to stay healthy.
Yeah, I do too. I hope that he's the first to break the curse, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, let's hope so. Moving on, as we get in the last few minutes here, Tony Scheffler, who was a tight end for 8 years in the NFL, decided to retire the other day. And, you know, typically that wouldn't be that big of a story, but the main reason he says that he's retiring is because he's either had 3 concussions in the last couple years or he's had 4. But either way, this is, you know, all of a sudden the concussion talk is right back up.
Well, it's no question that the concussions are a serious thing and have always been a serious thing, as we're now coming to see as more and more information comes out about the long history of the damage that it has done to a lot of players that played at such a high level as the NFL and other levels as well. But that, I'm sure that he had a long conversation with you know, his own personal physician as well as the team doctor. And, you know, at this point to start getting concussions that close together, and when you look at the evolution of the sport, how fast it's getting, how, you know, how vicious the hits are coming, more even the, you know, most definitely the lethal hits. I mean, just now the size, the speed of the game, I think that the decision he made for himself, it did not come without it being bittersweet, but it came with a lot of consideration as to what the long-term effects could possibly be.
Right, and transitioning from one guy that won't play this year to another, it was announced earlier this week that Arizona Cardinals linebacker Darrell Washington will be suspended for at least the 2014 season. Once again, another habitual violator of the substance abuse policy. I mean, what does this do for the Arizona defense having this guy out?
Well, I mean, it's going to say a lot because, again, you're talking about a dynamic player. I don't know exactly all of the terms around his suspension, but anytime that you lose a player that was that productive for you, and anytime you lose someone that's a part of a group like that, I mean, they have a very good defense out in Arizona. I would say that they mirror a lot of what you see in Seattle. And when you lose a player that is a voice and a player that is respected, it can be damaging throughout the season, but hopefully that, again, you know, we spoke earlier in the show about Arizona and they have a great balance out there. So hopefully this won't be too damaging for them. It just depends on how well the veterans corral the guys and the team itself just continues to stay focused on what their goal is, and that's hopefully to get to the Super Bowl this year.
And their head coach, Bruce Arians, of Colts fame, as he was able to take over and lead when called on, now out in Arizona, his answer to what are they going to do to make up for Washington's loss, he says the coaches are going to make up for it. How could a coach make up for a missing player?
Well, again, it starts with their ability to say, hey, this is going to be challenging for us. However, it is not like any other challenge that we will not face or we have not faced in our career somewhere. So I think with the head coach making that statement, basically what he is saying is that we're going to make sure we coach with the energy, we coach you guys hard, we're very prepared for what we have to do, and we will move forward with this. So he's putting it on the coaches to make sure that those players that might still be a year in development away from becoming starters, that they're going to be ready now. I mean, that he basically put it on the coaches to say, hey, we got short days and long nights, guys, and we're going to have this football team prepared to play and compete each and every Sunday.
Definitely. And as we all know about Colin Kaepernick's new contract and how it's kind of team-friendly as far as they could cut him. As long as they cut him by a certain time during the year, they wouldn't take that much of a cap hit. And he's still going to get his money for the most part. But, you know, he's trying to know that it's okay. He's not trying to take all the money so that you can sign other people. Well, Cam Newton made the statement earlier this week that as much as he liked Kaepernick and you know, he was glad he got his money and everything, when he sits down with the Panthers, he doesn't want a Kaepernick-like contract. And by that, I think he's really saying it's not that he doesn't want it team-friendly. It's just I don't think he is that worried about being the highest paid in the league. He wants to win.
Well, if you remember when we first started End Zone, that was one of the things that we brought up. I've kind of flipped into the sports management side of things, and we talked about this a couple of segments ago, and you can price yourself out the league. So
right.
One of the things about, you have to understand that this, a lot of this, you know, these terms guaranteed, and yes, the contract language speaks that. The problem with that, though, is the fact that if you don't have a team, then you don't have a legitimate contract. And so if no one's picking up your contract due to the fact that, you know, you price yourself out the league, you know, again, this is what they did to secure Mr. Kaepernick. It doesn't mean that he's going to see all of that money, and from what you're speaking, possibly any of that money, other
right.
than, you know, a couple of years of it. So now 2-3 years from now is where the contract is going to become heavily laden with some things and some decisions have to be made, and that's just a wonderful world of football. You know, naturally from the player's perspective, you want them to get everything they possibly can get. But then, you know, from an agent and, you know, from an organizational standpoint, you know, it has to be realistic, too. And if you look at any of those contracts in recent years, with the exception of a couple of you know, top-notch players, you know, Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay and Tom Brady and some of those guys, and even Flacco over in Baltimore, the numbers have to be behind that now. Because at any given time, that you're talking about going back to restructure, renegotiate, you're suffering if you don't have money under the salary cap that will continue to allow you to build throughout the season. Because, you know, all of your players might not last the full season. I mean, it would be wonderful if everybody plays 16 games and no one gets hurt. Unfortunately, we know that that's not realistic. So you have to find that room and that flexibility to go out and get a free agent or to make certain deals to get trades or what have you down the stretch so that you can keep yourself competitive. So I don't know. I mean, again, hopefully Mr. Kaepernick will see all of his money and he will produce the numbers behind it that would justify the contract. But if not, he has to also think in the back of his mind, I'm sure his agent is preparing him for it, that, you know, you might not see the, and, you know, you might not see the duration of the contract with this particular team. Just understand that now going into next season.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like maybe they had made an odd decision like that. Maybe it was their way of showing good faith to the 49ers. But that is going to do it for us for End Zone. And right on the other side of the commercial break, everybody just stick with us. Same End Zone time, same End Zone channel. At 30 after the hour, we'll be bringing in the new, I guess, Foul Zone. And we'll see you guys on the other side of the break.
Jeremy the Impact York here from Mellow Mushroom. Are you looking for a great family-friendly restaurant with food that is great and healthy? Drop by the Mellow Mushroom. They use the freshest ingredients to make everything on their amazing menu. Pizzas, calzones, salads, and more, plus daily drink specials. Go to mellowmushroom.com to find the location nearest you. Jeremy the Impact York from End Zone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with End Zone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business. Hey, Zoners, it's Jeremy the Impact York. Are you looking for a dinner full of flavor with a little kick? Then Tequila Mexican Restaurant is your destination for authentic Mexican food and drinks. Make sure to come by on the weekends for live music on the patio and bring all your friends for a good time. With locations in Dallas and Hiram, they are ready to dish out their great food and more. And that's right, Falcons on top. We are here. I am Jeremy the Impact York, joined once again by the coach, Mr. Haywood Hill, for Falcons Zone. You still doing good over there, Mr. Hill?
I'm doing great, Jeremy.
I think we're going to be doing exceptional here in a minute because there is so much to talk about out here in the ATL as far as Falcon-related news, even though we have to start with just another blow that this team makes, as we learned just less than 24 hours ago, or right at 24 hours ago, starting linebacker Sean Witherspoon will be out for the rest of the year as he's torn his ACL, I believe. What does this do to that linebacking core?
Well, at this particular point, again, it is a blow to Atlanta. Mr. Witherspoon has been very productive over the years that he's been able to stay healthy. But in the last couple of years, it's been really tough. I think now the Falcons begin to look at that position more in depth. I think they have some players there that can most definitely step in. But the question is now, based on what you draft, how you draft, the players you have, and the defense that you plan to run, who do you feel now can step in and give you those 16 games that you have to have to make you successful throughout the year?
Right. And, people just immediately, from the time he went down, when they realize he's going to be out the rest of the year, obviously two names immediately come to the top of people they could go get, and that would be Ray Lewis, who is retired and done playing, and Brian Urlacher, who, as far as I know, the only two teams on his radar would be the Chicago Bears and the Dallas Cowboys. But he's pretty good being retired too. I mean, is there somebody they should go get out there?
Well, no, I don't think it's anybody that they need to go get. I think at this point, Atlanta's in the process of rebuilding. And in the process of rebuilding, you most definitely have to reward the players that have been there. So now those players are not just there because they're, on your roster to put on a uniform. They're there because they have the ability to perform. So now you give those players the opportunity to step up. And as long as it's a open competition, I think it will be, now you get a chance to see players really rise to the occasion and see who really wants the job.
Exactly. A lot of people are saying that if it is somebody that's on the team right now, that maybe the new draft pick Shimbo could be the guy to step in and kind of take that spot.
Well, I foresee that. I think that here's the opportunity of taking a draft pick like that. If you remember, we talked about it in a couple of Falcon Zone segments earlier that, he was a rising name amongst teammates. He seems to be gathering the respect, and now stepping out on the field going into training camp, he should get an opportunity right now. That's one of the things about the league that I spoke of in End Zone that has changed the evolution of the league. Now a lot of players are coming out of college and they have to be prepared to go right into the NFL and play right now. It's no longer just your first round picks. It's basically you're drafting players regardless of their status from first round down to the seventh round, who steps up and who makes plays and who's ready to play right now.
Yeah, exactly. And I stand corrected. As the Twitter feed and everything blew up, I did not mean to say ACL. He ruptured his Achilles tendon, which is a minimum even for even the toughest athletes I've seen. That's a minimum of 8 months before he's even close to being able to come back.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, Achilles is going to take some time to heal because, again, once the Achilles does heal, now it's all the stress tests that it has to pass, you know, in the cuts and everything else to see if he can, you know, if he can plant. And again, he's a linebacker, so it's a lot of stress tests that go around it. It's not like it's just running forward and making cuts as a receiver, no pun to, you know, to the position at receiver, but it's a lot that goes on to now his weight. I mean, you know, he's 244, 245, and so playing and making those plays and the explosion, it's a lot that has to go into it. And, you know, I just wish him a speedy recovery. But speaking of players that have to step in now, that's the linebacker coach has his job set out for him, and really sitting down with the defensive coordinator as well as the head coach and the rest of the coaching staff, and just really, really watching it now. Everything comes into play. And what I mean by that, you know, how a player is performing in the weight room, you know, how the player is picking up on the plays, how well that player is executing those plays at that position, and then more importantly, how consistent are they throughout practice, not just at the position. It's going to be special team things. It's going to be a lot that's going to determine who gets an opportunity to void that gap this year for them.
Yeah, exactly. And as much as, you know, we hate to be the Debbie Downers of today, at least out of the gate, we go from one banged-up star to another, and that's, you know, wide receiver one or wide receiver two, whichever one you want to classify him as, Julio Jones. The latest I'm hearing from him right now is that he says he'll return by week one. But in returning by week one, to me, that puts him almost 2 to 3 weeks behind everybody else at a minimum.
Well, I mean, again, this is what Mr. Jones is saying.
Right,
how
right.
His body is responding to everything. And I'm not going to doubt that he can't be ready for week one, but you're going to need Mr. Jones more than just the rival game against New Orleans. You're going to need Mr. Jones to be healthy, you know, for the entire season. So now the question that remains is whether or not he's going to be able to perform, you know, at that level, you know. And again, you know, I think he'll miss a lot of training camp and in the process of doing so, but his condition is going to be the factor. That's going to be the biggest hurdle for him, is how well he can be conditioned. And again, as a coach, a player can do a lot to prepare themselves. But again, it's like I would like to compare it crudely to the sport of boxing. It's a physical game, so therefore you're really not going to know what he can do until he is physically in a game, and how Atlanta plays that on how they give him reps and try to keep him healthy. They're going to have to be very, very, you know, conservative with the way they reintroduce him to the field of play.
Right, and you know, I'm not saying as well that if Julio thinks he can be back week one, I believe him. I have no reason not to. But now this brings up that point again about Alabama players and just a lot of guys in general that take such a hard workload in college. And a lot of them get rewarded with the national championships and all. But, you know, this is not the first time Julio has been on the shelf. And even though I would say that part of it last year, him and Roddy – seemed like they were trying to make up for the fact that the other one wasn't on the field. At some point, you kind of have to try to slow these guys down and say, we need you for the whole season, not just one or two games.
Right, because it does them no good if Mr. Jones goes down again somewhere during the course of the season and cannot recover, and hopefully it won't be from the same injury that he suffered last year. I mean, those are the things that you have to take in consideration. So as a coach, you have to start looking at how I'm going to create the game plan and introduce enough time for the player to play so that he can get – because his condition is really going to come in the game. I mean, he will run, he will sprint, he will lift weights, he will go out and run the route tree. But his true condition is not going to come until he's in the game when he has to play at the highest level every snap and every play. So, again, you know, Atlanta has a few things to work out, but it doesn't seem to me that they are worried about what their answer is going to be. I'm sure that they sat down and thought about that even when they went to draft players. Where do they have the room and the flexibility? They even need to go pick up another receiver somewhere, you know, after week four or five because, you know, some things are not just panning out for them. I think they're very smart with the way they drafted, even showed great poise and a lot of discipline in how they structured these salaries, and I think they have room to go get someone if necessary. But hopefully Mr. Jones is going to be on the field and he's going to just come off the injury and produce as, you know, Julio Jones has been known to do.
Absolutely, and we do wish Julio just the speediest of recoveries because he is definitely a big reason why a lot of people go to watch games, and he's very exciting to play. And he does give Atlanta that extra step as far as moving up the ladder and making these deep playoff runs that Atlanta's been kind of lusting for many years.
Yeah, I agree. I think that he is, in my opinion, their future at that particular spot at receiver. And, you know, if he just can get into the game this year, stay healthy for this year, most definitely the majority of the year, if possible, then I think it's no question that, you know, he most definitely is bang for the buck at the position, and they did a good job in drafting him.
Yeah, absolutely. But moving on, there's been a lot of question because ever since the draft, they were able to get Jake Matthews, who seems like he's going to be the right tackle. He's going to be, you know, the stronghold on that right side of the line. Now the debate goes back to who's it going to be on the left side. Well, the way it's kind of working out at the current moment, everybody's kind of saying, including some of the coaches, that Sam Baker is pretty much their guy at the left tackle. But is he the answer at left tackle?
Well, again, he's a player that, you know, for the last couple of years has faced injury. It's not his ability by no means. Is it Mr. Baker's ability? But again, this is a tough business, and unfortunately, that's the one thing you don't control is you know, are the injuries. So now, with them coming back, and they've answered the question for the right side with Mr. Matthews, the question is now: does Mr. Matthews push for the left side? You know, that's the question. I don't think that it's going to be a question that Mr. Baker will step right back in. But again, as I spoke about the same situation with Julio Jones, it's a physical game. It's even more physical with linemen because they make contact every play, at every snap, at every point of attack. So now what has he been able to do to get himself prepared for that? And on top of that, his salary, that has to come into play now as well. You know, unlike you know, Julio that was coming off a rookie contract and some things of that nature, the dynamics of that, you know, Sam Baker's been around for a little bit, and he's gotten some things in his contract, and now the organization most definitely want to get a return on their investment. So I think he goes in as a starter. I think he has a lot to prove for himself, not that he's doubting himself or his ability, or he wouldn't be with the Falcons, nor would he have been a number one pick when he came out. But I think now he's just ready to get back into the swing of it and prove that he's the reason why he's there. And the money also proves why they drafted him there. So, again, the same thing with Mr. Baker. I'm hoping that everything works out well for him. But he's going into training camp with some competition this year. I mean, it would be just ludicrous to think that Atlanta didn't think about all of these things with all of the players in the offseason that hit with injuries and those who had reoccurring injuries. And I think we mentioned before that the force plate testing
yes.
that they have the exclusivity rights on, as well as Jacksonville, gave them some room. So they know where their players are staying. That's the one secret weapon that they have that, you know, only one other team in the NFL has, and that's the ability to realistically put all of their players through this test and see where they are to see what justifies them being there or not.
Right. And, you know, as you say that about contracts and stuff like that, just to kind of go back real quick, something to note on Sean Witherspoon's situation, and I'm not in any way saying that they should go one way or the other, just being informative at the moment. He is in the last year of a 5-year deal, where he's guaranteed $4.13 million this year, I believe, or that would be the cap. You know, banged up and injured a little bit, that may affect either his new contract with the Falcons or his future with the Falcons, as well as, you know, I don't think Julio's going anywhere, but, you know, like you said, Sam Baker, it really does depend on that contract as to the future they have.
Well, absolutely. When you're in the last year of your contract, you're playing to stay alive in the National Football League because you're not promised anything else after that. You know, there are going to be suitors. There are going to be people who are interested. But where you end up and how long you play, it's just where it's going to be. So I think that, you know, Atlanta thought about this. And when they went into the draft, they thought about this. And they looked at what players, you know, were in the final year of their contracts, do the numbers pan out. And, you know, again, players unfortunately don't control their destiny as far as an injury is concerned. I mean, that just we've seen a lot of players come and go over the years in the National Football League just due to injury. I mean, they were great college players. They came in, they had successful NFL careers. But unfortunately, you know, due to injury over time, or just suddenly, it can be career ending. And you never get a chance to see that player, you know, just blossom to what they possibly could have been. So, you know, with that being said, I think that, you know, the contracts, you know, a lot of that is weighing on the mind. That's a lot of stress on the agent right now because he has to kind of keep his client, you know, focused. And in the same token, in the back of the player mind, they're thinking, you know, this is my last contract year. Where am I going to get my next paycheck if it's not from here? So it's a lot of pressure to perform and to get back on the field and get your numbers up quickly so that you can justify being rewarded with an extension.
Right. In Sam Baker's case, Coach Tice did want them to, the offensive line, to add some weight this offseason, which he did successfully. He's been able to move with that. He was a 16-game starter in 2011 and 2012, but he only played four games last year, and the fans are kind of split on it. But to me, I think Sam Baker's your guy at left tackle right now, at least for the remainder of this year. But as we move right across a couple of spots over from him, we do want to break down the roster position this week of center. And as important as that is, the Falcons really have three guys on the roster right now that are competing for it, in Joe Hawley, Peter Kahns, and James Stone. Now, James Stone could end up on the practice squad before it's over with, but I kind of feel like this is Joe Hawley's to lose, and Peter Kahns is just going for that backup role.
Well, again, we've seen stranger things happen in training camp, and because, you know, I think I do agree that Hawley is probably his job to lose at this point, but again, once you get into training camp, it's the chemistry. It's a chemistry that, again, at that particular spot, that person is the quarterback of the offensive line. And so, again, it depends on how well the continuity of those guys form in training camp. And that's what really determines who's going to get that job. Again, you know, if you have someone that's already in the organization a year or two prior to a free agent coming in or someone's moving up on the depth chart, that also weighs in, but it also weighs in when they go back and they look at the film and say, well, you know, how many snaps did, you know, did this particular player, player A, take a position last year during the season? And if they're close, they'll even go back and look at practice and scrimmage and preseason tapes before they make that final determination on who's going to be the starter. But I think a lot of that's, you know, I think a lot of times people overlook the center position thinking that, oh, this guy's dog, he doesn't know when to snap a ball. But it's a lot more to that position in the ability to call audibles at the line with the quarterback and making sure that the protections are going to be in place and making sure everybody's on the same page. So it's going to be quite interesting in training camp what they do with that position and most definitely the level of competition that will be there at that spot.
Right, and when I'm saying James Stone, as I'm seeing the Twitter account blow up again, I'm not saying James Stone is in no means less superior to the other two players because, I mean, being I believe he was undrafted at a University of Tennessee, did quite well up there. If you can ask Tyler Bray how many times he protected him and didn't miss snap stuff. But, you know, like I said, it's between Joe Hawley from – I mean, he's been in the league for, I believe, 3 years now out of Nevada, Las Vegas, and Peter Kahns from Wisconsin. And if you can play offensive line in the Big Ten, I think you can play about anywhere.
Right, I agree. And I think also – one of the things that's going to weigh heavy, too, when they look at the center position, naturally, who dominates at the spot will start. It's no question what's going to happen there. The quarterback will have some input in that as well because he has to be comfortable when he steps up under center that he has that other person there that is making sure that things are happening and flowing offensively for them like it needs to be. I think what helps any of the other players as well, whomever gets the starting position, who might be second in command of that line, is if they play another position. So, for instance, if one of the other two players plays guard, that also helps them because they can also be, again, that gives them some flexibility on the offensive line. So I personally feel that the position is going to be open right now. I think that they're just going to go into camp and they're going to look and see, you know, how well, again, they learn the system, how well they put a lot of pressure on them to see how well they can quickly get those audibles done and ultimately what the quarterback thinks of that person that he goes under, who's going to do battle with him every Sunday when he breaks that huddle and he takes that snap.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we get into the last few minutes of the show here, just a few news and notes we want to go over and things we think you need to know. We want to say happy birthday to defensive end Tyson Jackson and Corey Peters, who celebrated birthdays this week. Hope they had a good, relaxing birthday, or if they were at a open practice or anything, that everything went well. The Falcons did release a couple people earlier today as just part of their – you know, it's just kind of that time of year where you got to go from 90 to 53. So you're going to periodically see people up and down off the roster, especially as certain people are released. They released punter Matt Yoklik today, as well as the tight end Andrew Saserba. I think it's just their way of kind of moving forward. Maybe, you know, you can't keep seven tight ends and you can't have three kickers. So, you know, we wish the best to those guys as far as their upcoming careers. And just as soon as I said it the other day on Jaguars Zone, the Jaguars are now not the only team that I've actually heard that are having open mini camp practices. There are two next week, the two open mini camp practices that the public can actually go to are on June 17th and June 18th from 3:30 to 5:20. So if you guys want to go check out the new team and be able to, you know, see how these guys really do perform. That is the best open forum to do that, and I appreciate Jay Adams and also the Falcons for posting that early enough so we could tell you guys. You know, as a former coach, did you ever have open practices like this?
Yeah, the open practices are there so that the fans get an opportunity to see the players up close and personal. Again, it is a great opportunity for, from a marketing perspective as well, to be able to introduce those players to those fans and also introduce new fans to those new players that are right there on the team. So, yeah, the open practices are something that you have so that people get an opportunity to get up close, get up personal, you know, get some autographs, maybe a few footballs signed. It's all about just most definitely keeping a relationship with the players, the organization, and the fan, as well as the league itself, just promoting good faith and sportsmanship.
Right, and finally it does that connection between the players and the fans to where the fans don't feel like, you know, the players are steps above them. They realize that we're all just, you know, hardworking people trying to do our job and have fun and pay our bills as well.
Right, and if I remember Reggie speaking on this as him being a very diehard Falcon fan, as I know him to be, one of the things that he mentioned was that the being more personable with, you know, with your fan base. And now that Atlanta's going into a new facility within, you know, within a year or two, that's going to be very important. You don't want to lose what you have, and you want to build upon it. But the way you do that is making sure that you get close to your fans, and, you know, they know who you are, you know who they are, and there's no question about the relationship that you guys are building for the support of the city and for the team.
Right, and, of course, I can't forget the Falcons tailgate event they're having through the Home Depot, I believe, is sponsoring this. It's a big tailgate festival. There's going to be food. There's going to be prizes. There's going to be all kinds of stuff. I've already talked to some of the people in some of the tailgate groups, including the people that won last year that are going to be back. And this is just a great way to show that, that the Falcons fans not only support the team and the players and the coaches, but support each other and as far as you know, tailgating and just having a good time at the game. That's going to be this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. at the Mall of Georgia. It's the second annual one. It showcases the best tailgate groups. And actually a couple teams are going to feature head coach Mike Smith and a handful of the players.
Well, that's great that, you know, that Coach Smith is getting involved like that. And, you know, again, you know, everybody's coming, and, you know, from the coach's perspective, we're taking off the headsets and we're getting more involved with the fan base. You know, a lot of times it's just it's heavily centered around the players because that's who they know, you know, until coaches make mistakes or something happens bad, then our name gets mentioned for the most part. But normally it's been geared around the players and the fans kind of know who the players are. But now that you're getting coaches involved, they're spending a lot more time making themselves visible and making themselves accessible because all, you know, everyone, you know, as they're learning, some of these the new potential fans that you pick up might be because you had a football question that you wanted to ask a coach versus just assuming it coming from a player. So I think the tailgate that they do on this, and I think you mentioned this is the second annual tailgate that they're doing. Is saying a lot about what the Falcons are doing to put themselves out in the community and be more, it's more of a realistic thing versus just a put-together type of situation. And not to say that they do that, but I'm just saying it's an opportunity to put your hands on someone and touch them and feel them and know that, yeah, I'm standing right here with Coach Smith or I'm standing right here with player X, Y, or Z, and I can take a picture with them right now. So I think a lot of that also bled over from a relationship, if you remember, Mr. Blank owning the Georgia Force. And in arena football, it is part of the fans' bill of rights. They actually have a fans' bill of rights, and which that is part of the mandatory process as to come out at the end of the game and spend time with the fans, taking pictures, signing autographs, just to show that appreciation for those fans being there and supporting what you do.
You know, that could be a that could be a precursor to something Goodell looks at for the NFL as far as not necessarily mandatory, but having a certain period right after the game when you're able to talk with the fans and everything like that. But that will do it for us this week on Falcon Zone. As always, I appreciate you dropping by, Coach Hill. It's always fun having you on.
Thank you for having me again, Jerome.
And you'll have to join us next week as we'll have more updates on Julio and Witherspoon and we'll be previewing the safety position. But for Coach Hill, I'm Jeremy York. We'll see you guys next week.